you so much for this opportunity to read here. It's a wonderful venue, great crowd. It's been great to read with Anne. We've been on a tour of Ireland. This is our fifth reading in the last 12 days. It's just been a real pleasure to engage with the audiences here and to hear Anne's work, especially to hear different poems and different versions of the poems. I'm going to do the same thing as Anne and start out with a poem by Ali, who was supposed to be with us, but literally the last minute she was too ill to fly. So this is one of her poems, When the Eagles Have Finished Taking It Easy. When the eagles have finished taking it easy, and John Denver has filled up our senses like sleepy blue oceans, I will stand at the chapel door, allow mourners to say what they think they should say, shake hands with faces I do not recognize, drink a cup of stewed tea, inhale a dry scone, accept the solitary sympathy card from your best friend's daughter, ring my brother who has chosen not to come, reread the note your sort of wife has had printed on your order of service, urging mourners to not waste money on perfumed wreaths that might comfort you on your way, but rather to give generously to a disease you didn't even know you had. So this book is called Preparations for Departure. And it's got poems set in 14 different countries, kind of based on places I've lived and traveled to. But because it's been so hot in Ireland, like a massive heat wave, and I'm from Texas in terms of where I live, but I still find this hot because there's no air conditioning anywhere. instead of kind of reading poems based on place, I've been reading poems kind of based on the temperature and the weather, and so kind of looking back through and thinking, is this a summer poem or a, you know, a winter poem, etc. And so I'm going to try and read most of the summer poems. This one's got a couple of seasons in it. It's called Ode to a Coffee Pot, and it's about a little French press coffee pot made by the Bodum company. Some of you might have seen those. Ah, Bodum, for 2 decades you have traveled across the seas, my constant portable companion, dwelt with me on 3 continents and never ceased to provide comfort when called upon. Together, we crossed the Sechenny, endured American autumns in exile, survived a London winter in poverty, enjoyed marvelous homecomings. I gently spooned freshly ground Colombian coffee into you and fill you with boiling water. Let you brew on your own, allow you to take your time like a teenage girl smoking on the front step of a rundown milk bar before pressing your plunger slowly towards your face. Together, we make lovely liquid. Smooth as the fleece of a vicuña, let us continue collaborating far into the future. I will continue to protect you, whether journeying or staying home. So today, my wife, Trisha, and my daughter, Celeste, and I, we went to a cove. And we did the Titanic experience and rented a little boat and explored the harbour. And one of the plaques down there is in reference to the Lusitania, which was a ship that was sunk by a German submarine, many lives lost. And it kind of reminded me of this poem. It's called Lusitanian. And it's about two of my great-great-grandmothers who are Portuguese, as you can tell from my skin tone. My Lusitanian ancestors could not have imagined descendants in the Antipodes with fair skin, blue eyes, and blonde hair, speaking English, not knowing a word of their tongue. They lacked the power to look across hemispheres and centuries, to foresee that one of their own would embark alone over oceans on a journey to a continent they did not know existed, where she would acquire a new language, anglicize her name, and abandon her former identity. And this is a little bit of a strange experience for me. Trish and I have been married almost 20 years, and this is the first time she's been to one of my poetry readings. Not because she doesn't like poetry, but because I usually do readings while I'm traveling solo, and where I live in Fort Worth, it's a bit of a poetry desert. I think I've only ever done 2 readings there, and they were both at night when she was teaching. So just circumstances, like she's just never been around while I've been doing a poetry reading. And this one, is about another time I was traveling without her. It's called Greek Summer. On the road from Patras to Corinth, I piss in petrol station toilets paved with marble, eat lamb, potatoes, tomatoes, and feta, great bread worthy of dreams. In Delphi, an Orthodox priest stands in an empty street smoking a cigarette, waiting for a funeral to begin. I chat with hotel workers in English, their Aussie accents thicker than mine, broadened by years driving Sydney taxis. Lounging on a nightclub sofa with a view across the Valley of Olives beneath Delphi, I sip ouzo, watch American college kids grind on each other in rhythm to Usher's beats, ponder my aging soul. In Egna, I rent a Vespa, gorge myself on olives, tempt fate in board shorts. At Sarpis, Athena unleashes her hair, bears brown breasts, knocks back another mythos, submerges in the Saronic. On Edra, I drink ouzo with the ghosts of Johnston, Clift, and Cohen, walk in Winton's footsteps, follow donkeys through alleys, fantasize about checking out, staying on to write novels. Drinking before dawn on a Plaka rooftop with new friends 10 years younger, I miss your presence, wish you could share the view, the wine, my bed. My maternal grandfather, Michael Quigley, was born and raised in Dublin, moved to Australia after the Second World War, and I grew up in a family that was Irish on both sides, and you know, it was a very much an Irish culture in my family, and we kind of thought we knew Ireland, and I have Irish citizenship, but over time, the more I've been here and the more I've read and studied, I realize there are so many things you can just never know about Ireland and about Northern Ireland unless you're a local, and this is a poem about that, but it's also a poem inspired by Van Morrison's wonderful song called Madame George off his amazing album, Austral Weeks. It's called The Distance Between. After a day exploring Belfast with local friends, aware of every boundary and rule, whether visible or invisible, spoken or unspoken, I finally begin to understand the distance between Dublin and Sandy Road. And the last line is from this. This one's called Poet Makes the News. It's for Seamus Heaney. When I was in my early teens and I discovered John Keats, I thought, this is it. I love poetry, I want to be a poet, this is all I want to do. And then I read Yeats and I thought, this is even better. And then I was introduced to Seamus Heaney and I was like, no, this is really the shit. Like, this is the greatest poet ever. This is for him. Poet Makes the News. I received the news from Dublin while eating breakfast. Seamus Heaney is dead. Thoughts turn to casualty, digging in midterm break. Shelley on Keats, Auden on Yeats. Driving to work, the radio on, I catch Heaney reading the last line of a poem I'm too slow to recognize. His voice, unexpected, alive just hours ago, invades my guard. The tears come, oozing, uninvited for a man I never met. All morning, articles, obituaries, videos of the poet reading his work arrive in my office, sent from Europe and North America. A colleague tells a grand tale of Heaney teaching her to dance a reel at a Cayley in North Carolina. Every major English language news organization in the world reports Heaney's passing. Syria is bumped. Obama can wait. Poetry is world news. At lunch alone, raise a pint of Guinness in Seamus' honor, read scaffolding on my phone in the corner of the pub. Driving home, Heaney is on the radio reading The Tomb Road, and Paul Muldoon is reminiscing about meeting Heaney in Amar. Muldoon attempts to read Digging, chokes up, unable to swallow his grief. So you think it's hot here, you should come to Texas in the summer, where it's 45 degrees Celsius every day for about 3 months. And in Texas, there are basically three types of cuisine. There's Tex-Mex, which includes a lot of meat. There's steak, which is obviously meat. and then there's barbecue, which is a way of cooking meat. So that's a lot of meat. And people will line up for hours for a really good barbecue. This is about lining up for barbecue in Austin. Standing in a dirt lot on Cesar Chavez, waiting to order brisket at La Barbecue, we sip on local brews purchased at a convenience store on the corner, make friends with our neighbors from Perth, London, and New Jersey. Sweat drips inside our t-shirts, slides down our arms, saturates socks, as we crack open our third beer after an hour in line. Finally, we receive our pound of brisket, potato salad, and pickles, eat at a picnic table with our newfound community, and savor meat slow-cooked for 16 hours, trading travel tales, we commune and imbibe, share recommendations, and discover connections. Remember, food always opens the door. This is a West Texas poem. Texas is notoriously conservative, especially religiously. And I have some billboards there that are pretty interesting. I remember seeing one billboard in the 90s when Clinton was president that said, and it didn't say anything about Clinton on the billboard, it just said, he don't inhale, he just sucks. Yeah. There's another one that's referenced in the poem. This one's called Commandment. On a West Texas highway between Plainview and Lubbock, white text on a black billboard proclaims, control your mind or the devil will, urging passing drivers and passengers to exert self-control, search souls, flee from temptation, banish impure thoughts, refrain from coveting thy neighbor's truck, think righteous thoughts in the service of fear. So I've been traveling in England and Ireland for a few weeks, and I like to travel kind of independently, but occasionally we'll take one of those family trips where you stay at a resort and lounge by the pool all day, and we did that a couple of years ago. We went to Orlando, Florida to see the Harry Potter world there where we spent a couple of days, and this is about that experience. It's called resorting. A band plays calypso and reggae beside the pool, while sunbathing adults sip sapphire margaritas. Kids play with beach balls, teens parade around the water's edge. Lifeguards nod in time, step back and forth poolside. Grandparents take refuge in the shade of turquoise, yellow and orange umbrellas. Boys sword fight with noodles. Parents survey toddlers in the shallows. Mothers rub sunscreen into impatient young skin. Palm fronds undulate lazily like tipsy dancers. Shadows slide slowly across the pool. Tween girls strut like teen girls. The white clouds stagnate in blue skies, lethargic as humans amidst humidity. Swaggering tween boys flex muscles present only in dreams. Hairy-backed men feign Chewbacca cool. Women check out other women, scanning for imperfections. Middle-aged men chase youth down the water slide. In Australia, of course, the summer is mostly January, February, March. I lived in a place that was extremely hot, and we didn't venture outside. We stayed inside during the day with the blinds closed, and this is about a hot summer day and poetry and finding out what I want to do with my life. It's got January light. I discovered my purpose during summer weeks, surviving on white wine, bread and cheese, imbibing Lawrence, Orwell and Hardy, reclining on a Chesterfield in a secluded room behind blinds closed against January light. This one's called Inferno. It's a Sydney poem. Anyone who knows Australian poetry knows that this poem will have a great debt to Kenneth Sluss's Five Bells. And it references Woolloomooloo, which is an inner suburb of Sydney right on the harbour. It's also a debt to Dante. A parked car burns in Woolloomooloo at 1 a.m. on a Monday. As I walk home, after a night at the Victoria Room, drinking gin and tonics with an easy friend, on an antique couch beneath a trapeze artist clad in suspenders and red leather trousers, an arm's reach from an almost nude smiling pole dancer, watching the hipsters swing to songs sung by a sultry girl flaunting a flapper dress, backed by bearded men grooving in vintage suits, playing upright bass, drums and acoustic guitar in a blues, jazz, folk fusion, reveling in their embrace of the pseudo-American. Cops nonchalantly watch the burning car, chat casually as smoke soot spirals towards the harbour while I pass the inferno, striding north to water. Sure, alright, so I'll finish with Preparations for Departure, which is the title poem. And this is a poem that I think connects a lot with Irish literature in general, in terms of the themes of exile, immigration, expatriation. We saw the Halbrook Pier today, where 1.5 million Irish people left Ireland, mostly to never return. Subject matter is pretty close to my heart. Born half a mile from the Southern Ocean, with salt in the air and seagulls on the wind, I am drawn to the edges of the world, always making preparations for departure. Unable to attain belonging, I exist in between, permanently unsettled and exiled. Thank you.